News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
Coming up for you between now and 7am, finance, technology and the future. It's Tuesday, so our personal finance guru will be here to talk about managing your money. And as always, we'll have the latest financial news. First up, let's take a quick look at the headlines from this morning's business pages. Owen Burke Kennedy and Peter Hamilton in the Irish Times report that despite a rapid acceleration in property prices and a surge in mortgage approvals, the International Monetary Fund has said there's no evidence of another housing bubble forming in the Irish economy. They do say that the controversial Help to Buy scheme for first-time buyers has added, quote, impetus to the market. And there is a note of caution. They say that persistent pressures could lead to imbalances, particularly given the lagged supply response. When it comes to Brexit, it says that the impact of the UK leaving the European Union on Ireland is expected to be negative and significant. It also suggests that Ireland should continue to broaden its tax base. And just days after the AIB stock market flotation, it urged the state to save temporary revenue windfalls rather than deploy them as current expenditure. Now, one man who's trying to deploy some capital as current expenditure is the businessman Declan Ganley, but he's been shot down in a planning process. He was looking to redevelop his local pub in a 2 million plan, but Galway planners rejected the scheme yesterday following objections from state agency Transport Infrastructure Ireland. That story Mark Paul has in the Irish Times. The pub, the Dairyn Inn, Ganley had planned to redevelop it as a new thatched pub, the Edmund Burke. He wanted to include a restaurant, a handful of commercial units and a four-story tower at the rear, inspired by local structure linked to WB Yeats. The rejection by Galway planners prompted an outburst from Mr. Ganley on Twitter, who said that entrepreneurs are treated like crap and taxed to the hilt. He didn't hold back later on while talking to the Irish Times, saying, "It will stay closed and that's it. You try to create local jobs and some bureaucrat in Dublin decides they know better," said Ganley. In the Irish Independent, Gordon Deegan reports that the IDEA has launched a hunt for large data centre sites. These are these Apple and Amazon type data farms around the country. The state agency has appointed Jacobs Engineering to hunt for sites in the southeast, the southwest, the midwest, the midlands, the west and the northwest. The Indo reports that the country's free air cooling climate will dramatically reduce the cost of hosting data, which is a nice way of saying we have very bad weather. And if you want to get an idea of how much these things are worth to local authorities, Fingal County Council stands to receive 1.4 million in development levies from its data centre at Mulhuddart in North Dublin if Amazon get the go ahead there. Now, financial technology, or fintech, is an emerging sector that combines the old world of banking with the new world of high-tech platforms. It generated £6.6 billion in revenue in the UK alone last year. And today, Fintech Ireland and Fintech UK are hosting a conference here in Dublin on the future of the sector. I'm joined on the line by Peter Oakes, founder of Fintech Ireland and a former director of the Central Bank. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning there, Jack. How are you?
Not too bad. Peter, first of all, let's do a bit of demystification here. Everyone hears fintech as a term being fired around, but what exactly is it?
Sure thing. Look, it's simply the marriage of finance or financial services and technology, and it's a term which is being used more and more widely now, essentially to cover companies that use technology to make financial systems more efficient. And we might think about that in terms of traditional financial services, say like your Visa or MasterCard, which you can now leave at home as you wander off, and you can use an app on your telephone or indeed your smartwatch via Android Pay or Apple Pay and Samsung Pay to pay for your goods and services. But it really is now becoming the word associated more, or becoming more synonymous, I should say, with generally startups. And startups which are founded with the purpose of disrupting incumbent financial systems and corporations that currently aren't relying on software as much as they should do. So you see this move really in payments, where you have companies in Ireland like Transfermate, Plink, and Plink, which are there locally. And, of course, we have the big one, PayPal. And we also have Stripe and crowdfunding, where there's been disruption, so we can all club together and lend money to individuals or indeed corporations.
Because this is a space that, I mean, Ireland, I suppose, should be good at. We like to think of ourselves as being good at startups. We like to think of ourselves being good at tech. And we do have a pretty large financial services industry here as well. How well positioned is Ireland to be a kind of crucible for fintech?
Yeah, look, I think it is. I mean, in terms of thinking about it being a melting pot for extremely hot technology and fintech, the answer is clearly yes. We have a lot of potential. We've mapped around about 100-plus indigenous fintech and regtech firms here on a map on fintechisland.com. And, you know, if you think about what they're doing, they're ranging from credit and lending, financial operations, currency, FX, the blockchain or distributed ledger technology. And the reason why I think we are doing well in this area is because it goes back to the foundations that people, not like me, but people here many decades ago laid in the area of technology, building up that area, Iona, and, of course, then the arrival of the big guys such as the Googles, the Microsofts, and the PayPal. So, we do have we are exhibiting all the right ingredients to make ourselves a global center or a global hub for fintech without
doubt. And how about attracting Brexit refugees? I know that London also sees itself as a hotbed for fintech. They obviously have a financial industry which dwarfs anything that we can offer in Dublin or elsewhere in Ireland. So will the companies who coalesced around that node be also looking to relocate following Brexit? They presumably want to passport around Europe as well. This is the services economy. How are our chances of attracting some refugees?
Well, look, we are attractive in that area, and I think I have a list of 35 companies, I'd say, of which around about 80% are from the UK that have asked about setting up in Ireland, specifically in the area of financial technology. And no, they're not actually going to pack their bags and leave the United Kingdom. They are going to establish a secondary presence in Ireland. Well, we hope they will anyway. So that's the one.
Secondary presence, that sounds awfully like a brass plate. That's exactly what the central bank doesn't like. They're going to have to bring...
No, when I say secondary presence, I think what you've got to do here if you're a business person is that you just can't pack your bags and leave the UK if you don't know whether there's going to be a hard Brexit on financial services. So I think what the approach would be is that you would set up a number of lines of your current business here in Ireland, and you would start trading on those lines. And then if it looked very apparent that there was going to be a hard Brexit, you'd flick the switch, move more staff over, and you would carry on those services at a much higher level and also bring over additional services. So it's not really a case of one or the other. And I think, you know, we can come back, maybe you might have a question there on the regulator, but I think they've been pretty clear, as you've already said, about the brass plate. That's not well.
Yeah, I mean, just to jump in on that regulatory point, I mean, just because this is all so new, presumably there's a lot of threshold issues, a lot of advanced and kind of risky stuff going on. How do you think, as a former central banker yourself, how do you think our regulator would feel about that?
Well, they've been pretty clear in a number of speeches that, look, first of all, they're not here to promote and they're here to supervise. And I think if we focus on the latter instead of the words they always throw around about promotion, we'll see clearly here. And what I think we're talking about is that every regulator wants a market which is supervisable. They only want firms that they can actually supervise. There's no good bringing firms in if they don't understand what the firm is doing or if the firm doesn't provide a benefit to market integrity, financial stability, or consumer protection. Indeed, if it threatens those three things, no regulator wants to touch it. So I think our regulator is, I would say, in the sort of top quartile, maybe just slightly below that in looking to be having very hard discussions on that. But that's all going to change this week. They're issuing a discussion paper on fintech and the impact on consumer protection this week. But we have seen examples where they've sort of said, look, you know, we're not saying no to the securities trading desks that are coming in from London or that may want to come in from London or indeed Germany or elsewhere. So, you know, I think we're going to have to think about this in terms of PRISM, our risk-based model, and how we want to calibrate our approach to regulation.
How we want, how much risk we want. Listen, Peter, many thanks for that. That conference ongoing today down in the Westin Hotel. Peter Oakes of Fintech Ireland. Thanks for joining us this morning. Now, you're very welcome back to News Talk Breakfast Business, where the time is now 6:44. I'm Jack Horgan-Jones. It's Tuesday morning, so it's time to have a look at the latest in personal finance. To do so, I'm joined by Owen McGee of Prosperous Financial Planning. Owen, you're very welcome to the show. Good to
morning.
See you. Today we're going to talk about the finances of being a newlywed. So now that the big day is done, it's time to get down to business and be a real adult and look after your personal finances. Owen, first of all, talk us through the tax advantages of getting married.
Yeah,
obviously, everyone gets married for love, but
there
are also
financial
upsides. Yeah,
it is all about
love
and we don't look at the finances at all. Well, the first tax advantage, I suppose, when you look at it is the standard rate cut-off point. So to try and keep this really simple, because we can get very bogged down in the maths, an individual can earn €33,800 before they start going into the higher rate of tax. Before they start paying 40% tax on anything above that, they're paying 20% tax up to €33,800.
This is our fabled low entry point.
Yes, exactly. And then what happens is, so if you have two individuals and they're not married, they can earn €33,800 each. Now, if you get married and you're still both earning more than 33,800, nothing really changes. You both keep your 33,800. But imagine if one of you gives up work. Okay, what you would expect might happen there, or what traditionally used to happen, was the 33,000 that your spouse wasn't using, they gave it all to you, and now you were earning 66,000 or twice that at the lower rate. A couple of years ago, Charlie McCreevy came in and said, let's encourage everybody to go to work, everybody who's at home to go to work, and he only allowed you move over a certain portion of your 33,800.
And what portion is that?
So the maximum now is 9,000 euros. So you can get your 33,800. If your spouse isn't working, they can pass over 9,000 euros of their 33,800 to you. And that means you don't pay tax on your 33,800 plus 9. Can't do the maths in my head right now, but you get about 43 odd. Now, that if you're the other thing that people don't realise is if you're not working, it's very simple. You give over the 9. But say you're only earning 20,000 euros a year, you can still give over the other 9 that you're not using to your spouse. So that's one big advantage. And it does make a serious difference, an 1,800 euros difference. Now, because of that...
That's 1,800 euros to the couple at the end of the end of the year.
Less tax that they're going to pay. The backlash then, though, was, oh, we want to stay at home and mind our kids and it's best for our kids, and let's not go into that, right? But that's what was the backlash. So what McCreevy did was, rather than reverse the decision, he said, okay, if you stay at home, we'll give you this thing called a home carer's tax credit. So that's another thing that's
God, this sounds like it's just adding layer upon layer of complexity.
Yeah, it's an Irish solution to an Irish problem. Let's just introduce a different thing so that we don't have to go back on what we did. So the home carer's tax credit is worth about 800 euros, an 800 euro reduction in your taxes if you're staying at home and not earning at all and you're looking after the kids. So that's 800 euros a year extra as a couple that you couldn't get if you were two individuals living together minding your kids. So they're the kind of tax advantages. You can pass over tax credits as well. So tax credits are very simple. You work out their tax bill and then you deduct your tax credits and a direct reduction in your tax credits.
So you can kind of trade these between the
couple. Yes, and there's limits to what you can trade. So for example, you can't transfer a PA. We all get, sorry, any PAYE worker gets a PAYE tax credit. You can't give that from one person to another or direct related employment expenses, like something that's specifically to your employment, you can't pass that over either. So they're the kind of tax implications, but then there's other things that happen when you get married.
Yeah, so let's move on to the large-ish pile of cash that you might have after the wedding if you're not totally wiped out for the honeymoon. What's the best thing to do with that?
Well, it really depends on how large-ish the wedding itself was, and the more people that was there, the more financially beneficial can often be.
Let's just say more money than you're used to having in the savings.
And it's interesting because you've been probably saving and worried about the cost of this wedding for 18 months or maybe even longer, and now the wedding is done and all of a sudden you come back from the honeymoon, you haven't blown all the cash, and you're sitting there going, okay, I now have some money in the bank account and I have a whole life ahead of me, what am I to do with the money? The first thing you need to do is you need to decide, do you need it in the short term, the medium or the long term? And if it's short term, and I mean anything that is kind of less than 3 years, look, you're just going to have to put it on deposit because it's too short. You're going to get a very poor interest rate, but it's too short
just
time.
Just leave it in the bank.
Leave it in the bank if you're going to spend it. If it's going to be longer than that, what you need to consider is, where are you going with this? And what I will say to you is, look, if you're going to go beyond 3 years, you need advice. Mm. And look, I know Vincent's off. I won't take advantage of you, Jack, but you need independent advice. And I would say that, but you do need to get independent advice about, OK, this is longer term. And maybe, just maybe, you could be thinking very long term here and taking advantage of tax incentives by putting it into pensions or some other things that would get you tax advantages. Mm. Then if you take another step on, Jack, and if you think
first
about
comes
it,
love.
Yes, then comes children. And I have four of them and I know it's a big ask.
Go on, share your nuggets of financial wisdom when it comes to kids.
We did a bit of research in Prosperous at one stage a couple of years ago and we figured out that it costs you 275,000, sorry, it costs our clients 275,000 euros to raise a child from 0 to 25.
Good
so we
Lord.
Looked at all of our clients. But anyway, one of the little nuggets that people get from dealing with independent financial advisors is things like the children's allowance. You get 135 euros in children's allowance. Now you have a choice. From the day the child is born, you can either put it in to a bank account and you could add 35 euros a month to it. And that will get you enough money to put the child through college at 18. There'll be enough of a fund. Or else you can spend it on clothes on the child or clothes on yourself if you want to. Or else what you could do is you could spend 10 euros of it, the 135, and just invest 125 euros a month in a well-constructed, well-diversified, well-advised portfolio, and there'll be enough in that to put the child through college. So this is the difference between getting long-term advice and short-term advice and doing it yourself. So what I'd say to you, everything changes when it comes to your finances. Everything changes when it comes to life with marriage, and it's a good time to sit down and take stock of where you're at.
Priceless advice. Thanks indeed, Owen McGee of Prosperous Financial Planning. We're back after these. You're welcome back to News Talk Breakfast Business. The time is 6:53. I'm Jack Horgan-Jones. On to markets now, and I'm joined by Alan Breen of Cantor Fitzgerald. Morning, Alan.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Let's start by having a quick look back at yesterday's action. Alan, what was moving the markets yesterday? Obviously, we had that big Italian banking recap. What was the effect of that as it played out?
Yeah, as we looked at markets, it was strong, actually. It had a very positive read-through. If we look at it very briefly, I suppose, what happened with the Italian banks. Two banks' senior bonds will become liabilities of Intesa San Paolo. So basically, there was a 4.8 billion amount given by the Italian government to take over the healthy assets of the two failed banks in Italy. So effectively, the whole package came to something like 17 billion. So the Italian taxpayers are to the hawk of 17 billion, which is quite considerable in this environment.
Because, I mean, obviously, Italian banks have been a bit of a bête noire for the European financial system for a little while. How did this impact the Irish banks, though, as well? And indeed, banking equities around Europe?
Yeah, well, it was day one of the new AIB trading, and it was quite successful. In fact, the float we saw on Friday was very good. It was up over 5%. There was a positive read-through from the financial system generally. AIB was up another 2% yesterday, and it does seem to be healthy interest in the stock going forward. We would be favourable on the story anyway. Within a kind of a 12-month price target, we would see in around north of €5, €5.05. It's a stock that by 2019 could possibly pay a 4% dividend yield. It is something like 600 basis points of excess capital. Which
so this is this isn't kind of irrational exuberance. This isn't the markets getting losing the run of themselves with AIB being refloated. Do you think this is a more of a long-term growth play?
Well, it's a strong, like, you're looking at the Irish economy, you're looking at the fundamental backdrop that is supportive of the Irish story. If you look at AIB, it's probably a pure play and a pure way of playing an ongoing Irish economic recovery. It's a significant part of its business, obviously, is Ireland, whereas you look at its kind of its relative peer, which would be Bank of Ireland, which is a different conversation when you look at the fact that 40% of its business is derived from the UK. So it's a whole different set of vagaries at play there.
That's an interesting one. Let's jump in on that. You were talking about how AIB gives investors exposure to the growing Irish economy. Now, there are several Irish PLCs, including Bank of Ireland, as you mentioned, that have big exposure to the UK economy. 1 year on from Brexit, are there kind of trends, is there a narrative emerging around those Irish PLCs who have a lot of British-facing business?
Yeah, well, if you look, I suppose, if I take a look at the kind of the stocks that would be in our core portfolio in Cantor, I'll name a couple of obvious names, I'm sure well-known within Irish retail. CRH, they sold off quite aggressively after the Brexit vote a year ago. They were off something like 14.5%. But since then, the share price has actually recovered substantially, rising nearly 40%, very well-diversified global name. So it's not just a UK or an Irish play, and it highlights the strength of that particular business. Another one, I suppose, is Kingspan. That was off 29% in the immediate Brexit aftermath. That stock has rallied 52% since I'm seeing something emerging here.
There's a bit of a snapback, is there?
Exactly, there has been, and again, that provides opportunities for investors when you get these kind of, I would say, black swan event. It was well flagged to some extent, but the outcome was certainly a black swan event in many ways. But coming back to your point about Bank of Ireland, Bank of Ireland is a stock that's actually got smacked post-Brexit. It was off 40%, off significantly, 42%. The share price was off. Again, 40% of its exposure is UK play, and it still is playing catch-up despite the recovery I've mentioned in other names because, I suppose, of its bigger exposure to what's going on in the UK. But again, if you look at Bank of Ireland, you look at its discount relative to its European peers, even relative to, say, AIB, it's trading at 0.81 times its price-to-book value, which is quite compelling. It's a very strong capital base. It's a diversified business. It might not necessarily be in vogue currently, but as time passes and as the political fallout and the real sense of what's happening with Brexit and the outcome from that, perhaps that stabilises to some extent, that's a compelling investment as well. So it hasn't really got involved yet, but who's to say, given its considerable discount, that it couldn't improve quite quickly.
Fingers crossed. Alan Breen of Cantor Fitzgerald, many thanks for joining us this morning. That's it for Breakfast Business with me, Jack Horgan-Jones, for this morning. I'll be back with you again tomorrow morning. If you missed any of this morning's show, you can listen back in the podcast later this morning at newstalk.com/podcasts.
News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.